It's a scenario that has been played out before. In Nigeria, 110 schoolgirls have been abducted, still missing. Culprit Boko Haram terrorists. Last time around, over 200 were abducted. In this edition of The Debate, we'll look at why the Boko Haram is still flourishing in that country and why the government has failed in reeling them in.
An attack by Boko Haram terrorists in the northeastern Nigerian town of Dapchi in Yobo State has left scores of girls missing. Some of the attackers were apparently camouflaged, with witnesses saying people thought they were soldiers. Following days of silence and confusion, the Nigerian government has finally confirmed the Takfiri group has abducted 110 schoolgirls.
I think there's no doubt that yes, the girls, you know, but the soldiers were actually in Dapchi on Monday evening. And as of today, we cannot account for 110, you know, students.
The details of the raid are emerging. It's now clear that the militants stormed the school, causing many students to flee into a nearby bush.
I was thinking I would never see my parents. I thought that was the end of my life and even wished for an angel to come and take me away from there. Honestly, we slept in a bush of thorns and the thorns scratched me.
Authorities initially denied the girls had been kidnapped, drawing anger from their parents. The incident immediately drew parallels with the 2014 Chibok school kidnapping. Boko Haram abducted more than 270 girls then. 100 of them still remain in captivity. Authorities are refusing to provide details of the current search operation. President Muhammadu Buhari says no stone will be left unturned in the hunt, with troops and reconnaissance aircrafts being deployed. However, many have been left scratching their heads. How did the government allow another mass kidnapping of schoolgirls to take place? The government says it had defeated Boko Haram, but the facts on the ground proves otherwise. The Takfiri group continues to launch a wave of bombings, attacks on security forces and abductions. Research shows the Takfiri group killed more people in 2017 than it did in 2016. So how does such an extremist group opposed to education maintain a presence in oil-rich, powerful and wealthy Nigeria?
The interests of the government are served by the attacks of Boko Haram, because the government, like I said, doesn't care about the people. Had it cared about the people, it would have not attacked the group, the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, and Sheikh Zakzaki, and he wouldn't be in prison.
Observers say corruption, marginalization, social inequality, lack of development and education are providing ingredients for Boko Haram to flourish. They also say the Daesh-affiliated group with its extremist ideology cannot continue to operate in a place where people are educated.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, editor at Pan-African Newswire, Abiyomi Ezekiwe, joins us from Detroit. We have author and political commentator Nasir Al-Omari, who joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Abiyomi Ezekiwe, let's start with you. I mean, here we have a second incident taking place, and, you know, I would think that you probably have the same question mark. How can they come, these terrorists? I mean, it's not like one or two people that they could put in a truck and take away. We're talking about here 110 girls, and that they... it's a large number to come in and then take away and abduct. Forget about the lapse of security. There seems to be some kind of cooperation taking place here for them to be able to abduct such a large number. Doesn't that put into question, first of all, the way that this operation is carried out, some question marks on that?
The Nigerian government has been saying for the last couple of years that the Boko Haram group had been largely defeated. In fact, they've announced on more than one occasion that they had been defeated for all practical purposes. Yet, we still see these attacks being carried out. The president who is in power now, Muhammadu Buhari, came into office 3 years ago. He said that within 6 months, he would eliminate Boko Haram. We're almost 3 years past his coming into office, and these type of atrocities are still taking place. I think that the government has to step up its security in Yobe State. They have to make sure that places that are considered soft targets by Boko Haram are well defended and fortified. Obviously, this did not happen. There was also a problem with communication. Initially, there was no substantive or verified reports that these kidnappings had taken place. They said that they had been, that the girls had fled, that they had not been abducted. Then the parents in the area came up with a list of 105 schoolgirls, and this was published. And then, of course, the government had to recognize that there was a kidnapping that had taken place. So this is a very damaging situation for the current administration in Abuja, and they have to work very hard to try to figure this situation out.
Well, Nasser Omari, tell us who the Boko Haram is. They've been now in existence for quite some time, I think the year 2009, and they've been flourishing. They've been gaining ground, although they have lost ground, which Abayomi Ezekiwe says perhaps is the reason why the government came out and said they've defeated them, because they've taken away some of their territory, but their ideology, and maybe even their support, is there. Tell us a little bit about this group.
Well, Boko Haram is a story of bad governance and extremism. They started out as a small group of religious students, undergraduate students. So these are not people who are living in poverty. These members were actually well-to-do families, kids of family of wealthy, not wealthy, but well-to-do families. The ideology was born out of a feeling that the government had let them down. The northeastern part of Nigeria is a story of governmental failure. The government itself allowed them to function and operate in mosques in Nigeria, and they gathered a lot of political esteem because they addressed people using their misery and the failure of the government to provide them with any services. So and then the government started to crack down on them in 2009 when Yusuf, their religious and spiritual leader, started to escalate in his rhetoric. So this is a story of bad governance. This is a story of a country and a government that has allowed the Salafi form of Islam to flourish and to have to address people and to enlist people, and then after that, it's a story of a government that cracked down on them, calling them terrorists and calling them ISIS affiliated to benefit from the international support against terrorism. So this is Boko Haram, and today it seems that they are not defeated, despite the declaration that they have been defeated in 2015.
The picture that our guests there painted, Abayomi Ezekiwe, is it correct to also deduct, therefore, that this is not just about the people who join it, that it's not about gaining economic independence maybe, but rather fighting a government that perhaps has disappointed the people there in Nigeria, and that is perhaps at the root of the problem, and for a variety of reasons that perhaps you can tell us, maybe corruption being one of them, because this country is blessed, just like many other African countries, with a lot of resources, but yet they are mired in this being one of their problems.
Yes, there's been a historical division within post-colonial Nigeria that goes back to the period of British imperialism, a division between the north, the south, and the west of the country. The north of Nigeria, particularly the northeast, has been the least developed over the last nearly 60 years. So there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of alienation from the central government, and this can serve as a breeding ground for extremist groups such as Boko Haram. In its early phase, the movement did get support from some leading political and military figures in the Northeast. And however, as the tensions escalated in 2009, the leader of the group was targeted and was killed extrajudiciously, along with a lot of his other followers. And since that time period, there's been an insurgency which has escalated, particularly in Yobe State, Bornu State, and Adamawa State in the Northeast. Now, they also have bases in the contiguous states in West Africa, in Cameroon, in Chad, and also in Niger. So they can flee across the Nigerian border to these other states. There is a regional military force that is tasked as an anti-terrorism unit to track down Boko Haram. Now, a lot of their bases have been dismantled. Nonetheless, they're using other tactics, suicide bombings and kidnappings, to reinforce the notion that they are still a power to be dealt with. So this is a major problem for the Buhari government, because he's a former military general, and he had pledged when he came into office that he would eliminate this insecurity in the Northeast. Yet, when we have high-profile kidnappings such as this, it does nothing to fortify support and confidence in his administration.
Well, it was in December of 2017, Nasser al-Maarri, where the Nigerian government announced that it's going to release $1 billion worth of excess oil account funds to fight Boko Haram, which put into question after successive governments claiming that they've defeated Boko Haram, that this is a major problem, unless they're going to be using that money or misusing that money and appropriate it in other things, which many have deducted to be the case. But nonetheless, it shows that this is a big problem. Do you think that the government is acknowledging that it's a big problem, that it's going to go after it, or is it just a matter of priority here? Because we're looking at an incident, for example, that involves Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. In a way, for the government, they view him as an opposition, but yet they go after him and his followers and they gun them down. But in this case, it doesn't seem like they're putting the real effort that should be allocated to this.
Yeah, unfortunately, like many third world governments, they want to take advantage of the international support against ISIS and against terrorism, and they use that support to crack down on their own people. And even when they went after Boko Haram, the way they went, they violated the human rights. So they created more anger, and the reaction that we see probably by Boko Haram members who could have been dissuaded away from the group was actually made worse by the accusations that that thousands of people were tortured, maybe Boko Haram members, but that doesn't mean that you ignore their human rights. There were accusations that the army itself is corrupt. The army itself is not armed, you know, well enough to deal with Boko Haram because of corruption within the defense ministry. So once again, we are seeing a pattern emerging here: bad governance, poverty, and that ideology that keeps rearing its ugly head every time you have a country like Nigeria. You know, going through you know, a tough economic situation. The ideology is also important, because we have hundreds of millions of Muslims who live in poverty, but they do not resort to violence and killing and kidnappings. So I believe that the Nigerian government allowed these people to operate. They gave them their Sharia law, which was like separate from the rest of the country, and then they went after them when they established themselves in these communities and they provided services. So unfortunately, it's the same story all over the Muslim world. These governments allow these groups to flourish for political reasons, and then they crack down on them, and they fail to provide the services that these groups provide to the people. And you have a situation today in Nigeria that is getting worse. I don't believe that the government is about to get ahead of this problem.
Well, we have Abiyomi Ezekwe, the U.S. President Donald Trump, who has pledged support for the Nigerian military and its government to fight Boko Haram. This came out months ago. It was actually towards the middle of last year. And at this point, I'm not too sure if funds have been given or not, but one of the traits of the U.S. command in that part of the world is the fact that special operatives go inside the respective militaries, which you can perhaps tell us, and they fight alongside the military. In this case, the point, Nigeria is one of the potential options for the U.S. in what they claim to be the fight. But doesn't that pose a danger when you have the U.S. military or U.S. Special operatives going inside these militaries, where the sovereignty of that country may, in a sense, be perhaps put under jeopardy?
It can. And in the previous administration of President Barack Obama, he had refused to sell certain types of weapons and also fighter jets to the Nigerian government of both Goodluck Jonathan and the current government of Muhammadu Buhari. President Trump recently announced that he was going to sell sophisticated fighter jets to the current government in Nigeria in order for them to fight the insurgency in the Northeast. Now, the problem is that if you have a situation involving corruption, bureaucratic problems within the military command itself, then there is going to be a lack of efficiency in carrying out these operations. Also, the economic crisis in Nigeria, although they're saying it is improving, the decline in oil prices 4 years ago had a devastating impact on the country. It fell into recession like many other oil-producing countries throughout the world. And they are just now attempting to rejuvenate their status within the international oil markets. These are some of the problems that the Buhari government is going to have to deal with. He's going to have to stand for elections again in 2019. And if this problem is continuing in the Northeast, it's going to make him quite vulnerable. The United States is working with the Nigerian government through the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM. They do a lot of naval operations, joint naval operations together, and certain types of war games where they participate with the United States and other European Union countries. However, the type of work that's needed to root out Boko Haram from the Zambezi Forest area is the type of work that many U.S. Special Forces are quite reluctant to get involved with. We saw what happened in neighboring Niger last October, where four Green Berets were killed,
right,
and there has still not been any clear explanation in regard to what happened.
I mean, this is just matter of question mark here, Nasser al-Amari. Generally speaking, in retrospect, we are looking at countries with high degrees of resources who are entangled in conflict. We could talk about Nigeria, we could talk about even South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo. Well, in Africa, you know, the looting of the African continent is something that's been going on for quite some time. Many of these areas are in conflict. We could talk about the areas like in the Middle East, or then you can look at South America. It's just place countries that have resources are mired in conflict. Do you see this as being a trend here?
It is a trend, and it's a part of the colonial perspective that the Western governments have towards the Middle East, Africa, and many Muslim countries. The colonial perspective is to allow governments to support dictatorial and tyrannical governments to rule people who hate them, people who think that they are corrupt. They provide them with political cover, international political cover, and these governments take advantage of that because they present themselves to the West as fighting terrorism while internally they oppress people and they violate their human rights. So we see this pattern. We see it in places like Saudi Arabia, where the Trump administration right now are actually have abandoned the fight against terrorism, and they are supporting the Saudi regime, for example, against its own people. The oppression within Saudi Arabia will result in these radicals coming out and saying, you know, all of these are infidels or representatives of infidels. So we see the same pattern in Nigeria. We see it in Afghanistan, where they supported radicals and madrasas, these radical madrasas, for political purposes. And then they abandon the country and they leave the civilians in a struggle against these radicals. So we, you know, there is a pattern, and the pattern is honestly, this is colonialism in its new form. You allow these governments to oppress people, and then you call them terrorists when they fight against these governments. And meanwhile, these countries are drowning in poverty. And then, you know, here we go, victims, 104 girls are missing, and nobody knows if they will ever be found or not.
So, Abiyomi Azikiwe, does Saudi Arabia's influence go as far as into Nigeria? Because I'm looking at what I just told you as being one of the headlines that came out last year. But if you have information as to what type of influence, if so, Saudi Arabia has in Nigeria.
Yes, they do have fairly good relations with the Federal Republic of Nigeria. Yet, this is not doing anything to improve the security situation or the economic status of the majority of the people in Nigeria. And the government should have been able to anticipate that these attacks could possibly occur. There have been numerous assaults on military installations in Yobe State over the last year. A number of Nigerian troops have been killed there. So it's surprising that the government was taken off guard when this school was attacked just last week and these young girls were kidnapped. I think the government needs to look at its foreign policy and then adjust it based upon the interests of the majority of the people who live inside the country who are still suffering from unemployment and poverty.
Okay, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much for that. Editor of Pan-African Newswire, Abiyomi Azikiwe, and thank you, author and political commentator, Nasser Al-Omari from New York. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. When we cover Tahwe, entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.